gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Welcome back, Super Friends, to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 46 for New Comic Book Day, March 8th, 2017. Vernon, we're getting real close to a birthday here.
Yes, we are.
And I am your... Say what?
This is going to be ours soon.
Yep. Super Friends, I am your host, Ken Rose, and sitting along with me, as always, here in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, everybody. How are you guys doing today?
I always end up interrupting myself when I'm doing my opening spiel there.
It happens.
But when was our first episode? Do you remember exactly?
I can pull it up on our Instagram, but giving you the exact day off the top of my head, I don't even remember.
This has been going I'm pulling by it so up. Quick. I'm pulling it up on my podcatcher right now. So, so March 30th. So the end of this month is the is our birthday.
Wow.
So we got to figure out something to do for that.
Definitely. Maybe we can get some cake.
Yeah, maybe. So, but Vernon, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. It's been a busy week for me, man.
Yeah, me too. I'm tired.
Pretty fun too, though.
Well, that's obvious. That's why we're sitting here recording a little bit later than normal.
Yeah, we've had a lot going on. We've seen some movies, got some stuff done, did a lot of reading.
And we saw, speaking of movies this weekend, we saw a movie that gave, a Marvel movie that gave DC a little bit of love.
Yeah, we did.
Kind of, sort of.
A little bit teasing, but definitely had to pay some copyright for some music.
Yeah, I wonder how much they paid for the Superman music. Anybody who doesn't know, Logan came out this weekend. And before Logan, you get a teaser for Deadpool 2. And there's a scene in the teaser. Now, this is not for the kids.
No.
The movie or the teaser, both are for adults.
Yeah.
But Deadpool...
But with Deadpool being a fourth wall breaker,
yeah,
he can definitely cross over to another universe.
Well, he jumps into a phone booth to change into Deadpool costume as the Superman theme is playing behind him.
It was perfect.
So I wonder how much Fox had to pay to Warner Brothers to be able to use that.
I have no clue, but it was worth it. The phone booth, the music, I'm like, okay, this is priceless. You got to laugh at this.
Anywhere they use the Superman theme, I'm usually happy.
Plus the phone booth. Oh, yeah, that's a win.
Yeah. So, but we actually have some news for this week that came out from DC. Not a whole lot, but we got some stuff. There's some really good stuff in here.
Yeah.
So let's get into our reviews. Now, Supergirl was an interesting show this week.
It was. I'm going to say Mon-El, however people felt about him up to this point, don't disagree with him anymore. If he says something they have a suggestion, probably should listen to him.
Yeah, it seemed like in this episode especially, he was the only one that was thinking logically.
Yeah, which was really odd because in the whole show, you're like, okay, Mon-El just the... You think of him as either a dumb playboy or you think of him as a muscle-bound jerk or you think of him as an alien race that killed a lot of people. He has a bad name, a bad reputation going for himself, but not anymore.
Yeah. So, but we see the return of Jeremiah Danvers, Kara and, their father. I always draw a blank on,
Jeremiah?
No, Kara and her sister,
Alex.
Huh? Alex, yeah. I don't know why I always draw a blank on that.
But yeah, they were happy to see their father come back, which anybody should. But as Mon-El was saying, it was very weird that when their father arrived back, it was from Cadmus. And for some reason, not only he came back, this is really what tipped him off. He had information about a weapon that they're building, conveniently just there. So why is it he's coming here at this point with great information for us?
Yeah.
It seems a little too convenient. Something doesn't seem right. And that's what he was going off on the whole show. But since everybody's happy to see their father again, they're like, whatever, he's family. You haven't seen dad in forever. But you got to think, we've been working for this company for how long they've been there? About 15 years? Or he's been gone 15 years?
I don't know exactly how long he's been gone. No, it's not quite been 15 years, I don't think. Maybe 10?
Maybe 10, okay, 12. He was gone for close to a decade or a little over a decade, I'll say. And it's funny that he popped up just like this. Now, last time they saw him, he was actually in trouble. Inconveniently, they saw him there, and he gave them a little bit of detail, barely anything. And now he comes back, and there's nothing but full-on detail. What changed in these last couple months?
Yeah, something's going on there.
Yeah. trying to think what else was going on the show in that point after they started reconnecting with their dad. Was there really anything else that happened?
Not much.
That's the whole focus of the show.
Yeah, they were welcoming back, and everything he said was perfect, just right, no problem. But Mon-El's the only one thinking, wait a minute. It was kind of easy to break him out, and all of a sudden he knows the entire plan of Cadmus?
Yeah.
This just isn't clicking right. Something's not right.
And it wasn't. Even John Jones, this is my thing, one problem I have with the show sometimes. Why isn't John Jones reading minds more than what he actually is?
Yeah, he should have, well, that's
the biggest thing that gets me every time on the show.
That, no, this one, Jeremiah has a cybernetic arm, and, Alex, being the medical person here, told him, your hand, whatever they did to your hand, you can't use it. How come she didn't notice it was a cybernetic arm? They don't have x-rays?
Let's point out something else. Supergirl's power, x-ray vision.
Exactly.
Not saying you want to x-ray everyone that comes through, but as Mon-El said, precautions. If you get anybody, I don't care if someone's disguised as Superman, if Superman's been gone forever, you probably want to x-ray him just to make sure it's really him. So, but
A couple things in this one that were a little hard to cover.
Yeah, that's my only issue with the show. It's like I could see if you guys didn't have powers and you're just going off of love instinct, but if you guys have powers, something should automatically click to use it right here and now.
Yeah, it was great to see Dean Cain back as Jeremiah Danvers.
Always nice to see original Superman come back.
Oh yeah, well not original Superman, but the TV Superman. Yeah,
true. I call them original now if they've been on TV years ago. That's been about 20 years, hasn't it?
Almost, yeah. Actually, it's been a little over 20 years, I think.
I'm old, man. Or getting there. But so this whole time they're inviting him over for dinner. They have Alex's I forget her name right now. Now I'm forgetting hers. Maggie come over. Then they have Kara and Mon-El come over for dinner. It's like, oh man, look, our girls then grew up.
It is kind of funny that Jeremiah does make the typical dad joke.
Yeah.
When he meets Maggie and tells her, well, I always said no man would ever be good enough for my daughter. It looks like she had to find a woman instead.
And he didn't warm up too well to Mon-El either just because of his race.
Yeah.
But he was asking the mother, you think we can never start back where we left off? She's telling him no. I think the mom even had more instinct than anybody. She's like, no, I haven't seen you for 15 years or 10 years or whatever. We're going to have to probably start over. We don't know each other anymore. I'm thinking, exactly what Mon-El's saying. You don't know him anymore. But they're having drinks. They're going, having dinner, talking about their old times. And everything's going well until they say we're accepting. Oh, John, this is when John walks in and says, we're accepting you back. And he's thinking, wait a minute. You guys made me go through every loophole, every jump, every skip, every hop. You had to make sure I blinked right before I was able to join the team. Why is it that this guy's been gone for so long, he just gets to come right back in like nothing changed? We haven't seen him for so long.
They hand him the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah, and he's saying, well, I think it's nice you're here, and they, you know, just going to let you walk right back in without doing any test training, scanning you, or anything like that. And that's when they kick him out. They don't like Mon-El anymore. So he has, oh man, what's Kara's friend in here? The tech guy.
Wynn.
I got to get his name together. When they had Wynn, he has Wynn say, you know what, no one else believes me, you're the smart guy, and I know you're probably thinking, none of this stuff makes sense. Do you think you could maybe spy on him if he does anything out of the ordinary?
Yeah, just kind of keep an eye on him.
Yeah, nothing wrong with keeping an eye on him. I think they should have kept, you know, a lot of eyes on him.
Yeah.
So once he detects he's breaking into, was it the Pentagon?
No, he was actually in the computer core of the DEO.
Okay.
Breaking into mainframe.
And that's never a good sign. I don't know why they still didn't see a big error when this happened. So he broke into that, and they're saying, oh, you've been spying on my dad? You've been spying on him? It's like, if anyone else here would have broken into that, we would have had a problem. He's like, oh, I was just checking up on my daughter since I haven't seen them in so long. I wanted to find out what they've really been up to. And then this is when Kara's like, okay, Dad, something doesn't sound right. So she goes to Alex, and then they get into a fight because she's saying, okay, our dad loves us. If he wanted to know anything about us, wouldn't he just ask us, you know, to decide instead of breaking into something? Would make more sense.
And Alex won't have anything of that.
No, and this is when Alex, I wanted to go through the screen and just slap her and say, wake up, you're daydreaming. Nothing's coming into your occurrence of, hey, Dad's doing something strange. So what really led them up to this was John Jones. He has a confrontation with him where he's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? I'm trying to think, what exactly was that tipped him off?
Didn't he find him down in the computer core?
Yeah, I want to say it was something really blatant, and he's like, wait a minute, something's not right here. He's like, you're not right. Then he's just hits him, because I don't think he can make any more excuses. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, buddy. And the reason why they couldn't detect any, his arm was messed up, and they're like, he might not be able to use it, because there's no nerves in it. There's no nerves in it because it's a robotic arm.
Yeah.
I think it's not kind of the same arm they gave to Cyborg Superman.
Like I said, if they would have checked his, or actually did a check on what's actually wrong with his arm, they would have found out that it was cybernetic.
Yeah. So, that happened, and then John Jones is saying, yeah, everything's wrong here. We need backup. Keep eye out on him. He's public enemy number one at this point. So, it turns out he's doing something for Cadmus. I think it's probably something to do with his family. They're blackmailing him, because it doesn't sound like he wants to do this. As he told Martian Manhunter, I don't want to hurt you, but I have to. Now they're in the woods, and they had a weapon that he was telling them about. It's not the exact same weapon he was telling them. It's something different. Still a very bad weapon. This is, I think, going to eradicate all metahumans on the world.
Well, no. What it is, they want to eradicate all aliens from Earth.
Okay, all aliens from Earth. Okay.
Yeah, it's like a genocide bomb.
Yeah, and I think the reason why he's working for them, and they still could lie to him. This is the thing I never understood with any superhero or non-superhero related film. When the bad guy wants you on their side, and they're forcing you and by blackmailing you on their side, and they promise you not to hurt anybody you care about, they're lying to you because they're still the bad guys. They're still going to kill everyone.
Yeah.
So that's something that never got me in any of these shows. But I think he's working for Cadmus, and he's going to let them make the bomb because he knows how powerful they are. But they promised him, I think, do not hurt Supergirl or my other daughter, since one's an alien. But if this bomb's going to go off, I really don't understand how they're going to stop them from actually killing Supergirl anyway. So that's why he's working with Cadmus, and he really doesn't want to because he's still thinking of his family. And by the end of all this, Alex has him dead in her sight, saying, if you move, Dad, I will shoot you. And he says, I know you will. I mean, I understand if you do shoot me, I would do the same thing. But she can't kill her father, which I wouldn't have killed him. I wouldn't have done that at all. I would have shot him in the leg and said, ooh, look at that flesh wound. I'm carrying you back to a cell. So that's what happened in the series in this show. Her dad comes back. Bad things happen. No one really trusts. Everyone trusted him except Mon-El. And by the end of all this, Mon-El still doesn't get a, oh, sorry, we didn't believe you, Mon-El. You were right for once.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Everybody's so down at the end of this because they had Jeremiah back, and then now he's gone again, that really there's not much time for apologies when they're basically crying.
Grieving.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that happened. And the next episode we'll get into a little bit later of the new DC news we have. But that
I have another one in the news, or a little bit of news here for an upcoming episode. We have a little bit more information about Terry Hatcher. Did you see that? I didn't put it up on our notes.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
I didn't put it up on our notes, but comicbook.com actually has a little bit of synopsis for the first episode Terry Hatcher showing up in. Which is only in 2 weeks. It's the week after next, because she's going to be on it on March 20th.
Man, I know it's coming up that soon.
Oh, yeah.
They just keep popping up. We're busy, man.
Well, in this episode, it's actually the opening chapter of the musical crossover for Flash and Arrow, or Flash and Supergirl.
Okay, so that is coming
Most of
up,
it's going to take place over on Flash. But you're going to get the guest appearance by Darren Criss from Glee as the Music Meister, but you also get the official debut of Terry Hatcher and Kevin Sorbo. Now, the synopsis for it here is Terry Hatcher and Kevin Sorbo, guest star, and then there's guest star Darren Criss. He'll make his debut as the Music Meister. Now, a new villain, guest star Terry Hatcher, comes to National City, putting Supergirl on high alert. Meanwhile, Wynn's girlfriend Lyra gets Wynn in trouble with the law. Maggie attempts to help Wynn, but old loyalties get in the way. And the Music Meister attacks Supergirl, which is going to lead into the Flash episode.
Mm-hmm.
So whoever it is with Terry Hatcher and Kevin Sorbo, we'll find out in 2 weeks.
Hmm.
Now, they could still be aliens coming to National City. I don't know.
I want to just assume they are, but we're not for sure. But more than likely,
I think it'd be great if they're either Mon-El's parents or maybe like bounty hunters come to get Mon-El because Mon-El's actually the prince.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about the prince thing. We also got a little bit glimpse into that too.
Yeah,
this last episode they said, what did he tell? Oh yeah, her father said, "I know what you really are," and Kara still doesn't know. So I suggest you keep your mouth shut about me.
Yeah.
So that was another thing that tipped me off of Jeremiah's up to something bad too.
It looks everybody but the DEO and Kara knows who he is.
Right. Which is weird and crazy because I'm beginning now to not trust him, or as you said, it might just be their son. But he should probably tell them because this doesn't sound like it's going to end up well.
No, it's not going to end well at all. So, but from there, we move into Flash, and we actually get the second half of the Gorilla City episodes.
Yes, and this is something we've been waiting for the whole season.
This one was actually really good, too. And I think, being that they were in the actual city, it made the CG a lot better, because they didn't have to CG the arena or anything else, they just had to put the apes in there.
Right. A lot more smarter than just doing the whole exact city of that. But,
well, go ahead and tell them what happened.
We got to see why am I forgetting her name right now? I was going to say Vixen, but why we got to see...
What, Gypsy?
Thank you. Why we got to see Gypsy back. She was actually under mind control, as we thought when we made the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't mean to do this, but somehow Grodd got her from another Earth to vibe them to Central City. And as they said, Grodd always thinks one step ahead. So... that's what he did, and now they're here, but she's also locked up, and at this time they're trying to convince her, Cisco especially, to help them. She's a little indifferent on that.
Yeah. She realizes that Grodd is very dangerous. She doesn't want to die fighting Grodd.
No, but she's a real hero, and by the end of it we get to see what she actually stands for.
Mm-hmm.
But we also got to see Harrison Wells back of Earth 2 meeting HR, and they are completely different. Nowhere near the same personality.
We got Tom Cavanaugh playing both characters, and they couldn't be more different. They're total polar opposites.
One doesn't care for the coffee as much as the other.
Well,
even got to the same point where he was brushing his teeth, and he's like, "Oh, you're a side-to-side guy. I'm more of a circular motion guy." It's like, yeah, you guys are completely different. And we got the mention of Jesse Quick and Wally West talking to Harrison Wells about her staying on Earth 1 with them and not coming back with her father. He was actually a little scary in here because he didn't mind it at all. He didn't yell. He didn't throw anything. And they're thinking to themselves, is this guy okay? This isn't Dad. He's usually freaked out at little things like this. So as the episode goes by, without Jesse in the room, he's talking to Wally saying, "Well, I'm not going to be here for a long time, and you know I'm going to die soon." Now, when he says this, Wally gets really sad, and he's like, "Oh no, I don't want her to come to Earth 1 with me and live with me if her dad's dying. She should be with him. He's family." So he gets real sad, like he's going to tear up, and Jesse's like, "What's wrong? Your dad told me not to tell you, but he's dying and he won't be with you long, so just stay on Earth 2 with him." She's like, "Wait a minute, did he really tell you that?" He said, "Yeah, aren't you like more sad?" She's like, "Hold on, I'll take care of this." As they're in the room with everyone, she puts him on blast and says, "So you told Wally you're dying, huh?" He said, "Well, I'm dying eventually, like everyone else dies."
Exactly.
It's like, wow. Wow.
Well, this is actually consistent with Wells' character anyway. Remember last season, there was a lot of really questionable things that he did that was all because he wanted to save Jesse.
Yeah, and it's like, I understand she's your daughter, but she's not your little 5-year-old girl anymore.
Yeah.
She's a grown woman. She puts him on blast saying, "Dad, you're basically full of crap and don't ever do that again. Stay out of my life when it comes to me and Wally. Can't you just be happy for me for one time in your life?" And that happened. And then they go back to business like, "Oh, well, they just had a father and daughter, convention and we're not everybody. Let's get back to track." So this is when, they get back to business with getting, at this point also Grodd has taken over the mind of Joe West. And he also did that once again to be one step ahead of Flash to distract him with the main thing that was going on. They actually kidnapped a general that was in charge of the nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
But since Grodd did take over Joe West's mind, anyone that Grodd gets in the mind of, they can still see glimpse of what he saw. So because of that, they were able to make some type of brainwave machine where they could look back into what Joe actually saw Grodd doing. And by doing that, he was able to sketch out a drawing of the general that they kidnapped. So now they know what their plan is. Oh, and also, earlier in the episode, one of the nuclear bombs were going to go off. Well, Flash stopped it because, once again, Harrison Wells was there to guide him through it, just like it was in the first season. And I thought that was a good callback to the first time we ever saw him and Harrison Wells make that father-son relationship. So, after that, We got Gypsy and Vibe talking again. He's telling her, I know you're a real hero, and I know you really want to help us, and you just keep running away from where you really are. Now, I'm going to let you go back to where you came from, but if you want to stay, I will not mind it. And he still likes her, too, and she likes him. She's hiding it. He lets her go back to her Earth, but after they figure out that Grodd's this serious about it, and they're in Central City, and the Speedsters cannot take care of it, which is Jesse, Kid Flash, and the Flash can't stop him. They're going to need help from Vibe and Gypsy. So by doing that, he goes to her Earth. And in this episode, we got to see another Speedster.
Yes, we did. We get to see the Flash. I think they call him the Accelerated Man or something from Earth 19.
Okay, yeah, I've seen some pictures of him. I never heard of him, really, until this week. I did some research, so I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, it makes sense with the DC Universe. There's going to be a different Speedster in every Earth, but this one they said was the most comic book accurate costume out of anyone else on the show. They literally looked like they pulled straight out of the comic book, no changes. But once he goes there, he talks to her, and he's telling her, we really need your help, and he does convince her to come back. Now, because of this, Grodd is taking over Central City, but they can't take him down just by the power of Barry. Everyone else is getting beat up. The only other person to take, or other beings to take down a gorilla would be another gorilla. And this is where we get, and what's his name in here again? The character?
Solivar.
Solivar. I was going to say Savitar.
Nope. Solivar. That's later.
Mm-hmm. Solivar comes back, and he takes out Grodd. They have a duel once again, like they did in Gorilla City, but he wins. I thought it was pretty funny that Grodd's that weak compared to another gorilla. When it comes to humans, he just takes over.
Well, remember, originally, Grodd needed the Flash to take out Solivar for him.
Yeah. See, when I saw that, I'm thinking, Grodd's smart. He doesn't want to fight. Who want to do that? If you, no one wants physical confrontation. No, he did that because he cannot beat them. And I forgot also, he's from Earth 1 when gorillas are still gorillas. They haven't had all this training. They haven't had their own mind to have a world by themselves. On Earth 2, they're a society of enhanced apes that have been doing this for their whole lives. So it makes sense Grodd's a little bit more weaker than they are. So he takes him down with ease, really, and he's going to kill him, and Flash tells him, stop. Remember when I saved your life and spared you when I beat you? He's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Well, I don't want him here still. They're like, well, we'll keep him on our Earth since he came from our Earth. He was never part of your world anyway.
Yeah.
So they're going to lock him up in the most maximum facility they can probably imagine. Hopefully that keeps him in there, but it's Grodd. He's going to get out at some point. But
they're putting him in – they gave him back to Lila from Arrow and put him in the Argus facility.
Okay.
They also mentioned – that happens to be where King Shark is.
They did mention that.
So imagine King Shark and Grodd in the same facility, and what happens if the two of them break out?
Ooh, that's a lot of CGI.
Mm-hmm.
But by the end of the episode, everybody's having fun, and they're back to normal once again. The Flash crew is enjoying life. And then this is where we get to see Wally and Jesse cuddling up on the couch, and they're going to try – well, he's going to go out and get coffee for her as he's running to Jitters. He gets an encounter from Savitar. He pops out of this time or the Speed Force where he did trapped him in. And we don't know what's going to happen to him in the next episode, but nothing good is going to happen for Wally that we know of.
Yeah. So Savitar has returned, and we know next week that we get a lot more Savitar on the show.
Mm-hmm. Poor Wally.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this is going to spell trouble still more for Iris. As you said, the more as this series lean up, I'm thinking they may kill off Joe.
It's possible.
Definitely. It's been so many changes already with what they saw in the news article. Some things are still on track. The gorilla still did come to Central City. But we did not expect to see Gypsy come back either and help them and bring back the other gorilla.
Yeah. Well, we also find at the end of the episode that Barry decides to take a different track on trying to change the future. Because they've been actively trying to change these storylines that are happening on that they saw on the news monitor. Mm-hmm. But he finally decides, you know what? How about instead of me trying to change what we know happens in the future, how about we make a future? And he proposes to Iris.
He's like,
well, if Savitar is going to kill my girlfriend in the future, what happens if she's not my girlfriend?
Well, she's my wife.
Mm-hmm.
At least fiance at this point.
Exactly.
If I was him, I would sound up some money right now and marry her, you know, the next week. Therefore, when they might have read that news article, it's like, huh, wonder why her name's not there. And maybe it can come back because of this, and she'll be there, and they'll be back on track. But we'll see how everything goes.
Exactly. So that was Flash, and then we're moving on to Arrow.
And once again, I'm going to say it, Arrow was my favorite show this week.
Arrow was really good this week.
Yeah, and with Arrow being so good, we did get to finally figure out who Prometheus really is.
That floored me. Because that's not supposed to be that way.
No, it floored me because I predicted it, and we've been talking about that on the show. It's like, it's probably him. He's new.
No. But the problem is, I was sure he was Vigilante. Because in the comic books, that's the Vigilante's alter ego.
They switched it up.
They flipped it on us.
So
we do find out at the end of this episode that the DA, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, but he is Prometheus.
Yeah, I think to me it would have been better if he was still Vigilante, not Prometheus. The reason why I didn't like him being Prometheus, it made too much sense to do it. We've seen it in Flash so much, I was hoping they would have changed that and gave us some new character.
Yeah, but like I said, it was a big surprise to me because on the in the comic books, Vigilante is the DA character here.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So now we got to figure out who Vigilante is.
Yeah. We'll probably get it. Who knows? After seeing something like that, they could flip it on us and surprise the heck out of us of who it really could be.
Well, the first thing that got me was in this episode, Ollie is going through impeachment hearings for covering up the fact that the Arrow had killed the Detective Malone.
Yeah, they're having all these trials for him, really, trying to say, hey, why did you keep all this information from the city if you knew that Detective Malone really got killed by the Green Arrow? And then you tried to tell everyone else that Prometheus had something to do with it, which he did, but he did not murder him.
Yeah, but when Ollie goes out to make a press conference, as soon as they get done with the first set of hearings, Ollie gets in the limo to head home. And Vigilante tries to take him out. Now, thinking that everybody and most people thought that Vigilante was the DA, the DA was actually representing Ollie in the trial. He's his lawyer. So he's like, well, why would he be trying to take out Ollie when he's trying to save him? Well, now it makes sense because that wasn't who we thought it was.
And in my opinion, it still could have worked if he's really the Vigilante trying to take him out, because it's like, hey, at any cost, I'm still going to take you out if you're a bad guy.
Yeah, well, I was wondering if they were going to flip that and try to make it so that it made it look like because the Vigilante was trying to take him out, that made him innocent.
Yeah.
I was wondering if that was part of the idea of it, but it wasn't.
Mm. Yeah, we didn't really know exactly where this was going to go till the very end. Well, not the very end, mid episode, I want to say. But yeah, he gave Ollie a concussion, and the team was battling it out back and forth. Vigilante is very hard to take down.
Yes.
He's always getting away.
He definitely knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I'm thinking he has some type of military training background. Maybe it could be another character we've seen on the show before with a military background.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he gives Ollie a concussion by all this, and everyone that was in the limousine got injured. But the good thing was Black Canary was able to zap him with her sonic, her canary cry. And from doing that, a piece of his goggles came off, and they took that back, and Ms. Terrific was able to scan that and track him down. Speaking of which, we finally got his
T-spheres. Don't call them balls.
His T-spheres.
Renee Wild Dog had some of the greatest one-liners in this whole thing talking about those T-spheres.
Yes. So you found your balls. Wait a minute. No.
He created them. He made them.
Oh, yeah. He's like, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I didn't mean for that to come out the way it did. He said, no, that's improvement. That's okay. You made a joke, but you corrected yourself. That's fine for you.
Yeah.
So, Ms. Terrific's definitely coming more of what Ms. Terrific is in the comic books and as the season goes by. But as that happened, we'll get to that later on in the episode. But we get to see Vigilante on the rooftop battling Prometheus. And Prometheus comes to Vigilante and says, I seen what you did to Oliver Queen there. He's mine. Leave him alone. So they start duking it out. And in this fight, Prometheus did win. Vigilante looked like he got thrown off the building, but of course he didn't really die. He might have got thrown off, but he went somewhere we couldn't find him. And at this point, Prometheus takes off his hood and his mask, and we see it is the DEA.
That was a huge surprise for me.
Yeah, it was a surprise, but it wasn't at the same time. Like I said, I kind of figured they were going to do that anyway, just because what we saw in The Flash, but I was hoping they would not, because we've seen The Flash so many times. Anyone that's the closest to the main character is going to be the one that's going to turn on him as the bad guy in mid or last season. We'll figure that out.
Well, this is the first time they've really done that in Arrow, though, isn't it?
It is, but since, I've seen Flash so much for the past two seasons, it's the same thing, and now they put in Arrow, I was like, come on, guys, you could have gave us a little something different, but not a big complaint, just wish they would have went a different route. So that's one of the problems. Two, you still get Thea and Felicity not being Thea and Felicity in this show. They're turning darker, really, than what Ollie ever did.
Yeah. Well, not darker than Ollie, but they're going down the path towards his direction.
They're more conniving than what Ollie was. Ollie was never that conniving. If he felt someone's bad and he wanted to take them out, he'd just say, hey, you failed the city, put an arrow in you. Boom. These women are destroying people's lives at this point. At this point, you might as well be dead. They're taking away people's jobs. They're trying to dirty people's names even after they're dead. Like Malone, Thea said, hey, I know a perfect way we could fix this. Slander his name and make him look like the bad guy, and it's all a cover-up. And Ollie's like, no, that's not what we stand for. We don't stand for making good people look bad. Especially if they're dead and they're not here to defend themselves. The dude had a family, too. You don't want his wife knowing that. It's just wrong. Then you're getting Felicity still working. Now, what's the group she's working for, making up?
Helix.
Helix. She recruits, by the end of the show, her twin or her clone, I'm going to call her, the other Felicity with the brunette that we've seen in a couple episodes prior to this. She actually gets her to join. But also, Diggle told Felicity something that I guess got delivered to Ollie and also then got delivered to Thea. Was it, if you keep messing with fire, you're going to get burned.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like Ollie has already been through all this and he went down that dark path and he has to deal with that all the time. He doesn't want them to have to deal with this.
No, which it seems like Thea even said, the reason I think I'm slandering people's name with all this politics stuff and just blaming on the power of politics, I had a very dark streak from coming back from the pit. She said last time, and we saw it in the last season. So she said, now I'm covering up the bloodshed with just hurting people in different ways. So she quits and she leaves and she says, I can't be here. Please don't ask me to stay, because if I do, this is going to keep happening. And honestly, she's right. And Ollie figured that out too. So he lets her go. Now, I don't know if that means she's not going to be on the season anymore until like probably later on in the in finale. Or we might see her come back somewhere, but for now, I don't think she's going to be on the show for a couple of episodes. And that might have been why she's been keeping hush-hush. Remember, we were talking about it a couple weeks ago, why it seemed like she's not really putting too much out on her social media or talking about the show. This might be why.
Yeah.
She wasn't going to have a too long stint on this season right now. With all this happening, Ollie says, you know what? I know how I'm going to fix this whole Green Arrow problem of them being down my neck for the mayor and they're hunting down the Green Arrow. I'm just going to say I did this because I thought I was protecting the city. Turns out I'm protecting the city from a mass murderer. He's not just a vigilante. I thought he was doing good. He's not. He's hurting the city. He's killing people. So basically he says, you know, I'm going to clear my name as mayor so they stop breathing down my throat where I can do one job and only have to worry about the other one. The Green Arrow can be hunted down. He's not the public figure. I am.
Yeah, they end up he basically straight up throws the Green Arrow under the bus.
Yes. And as all this is happening, Vigilante still wants to kill Mayor Queen. So you get Sparta's, Wild Dog and Miss Terrific taking down Vigilante and saving him from killing off Ollie while he can do his speech. And this is where his T-Spheres actually even have more of an impact than we thought. They just don't track down Vigilante. They can also be used as bombs. So
yeah,
that, as was described to my mom, picture Batman's Batarangs. Or Ollie's arrows and T-spheres. That's really what they are.
Pretty much.
But they, I think they're even better because they have the tracking. They don't need to be thrown. They can just kind of get a button pressed and they can do whatever they want without him touching it.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, but we also
Now, remember for the last couple episodes, Ollie's girlfriend / ex-girlfriend, the reporter,
had
pretty
much
figured out who the Green Arrow was. So, at the end of this, he causes Felicity to. And Felicity and Thea to fix her record and actually so that she can actually get her job back.
Yes.
And by doing that, he ends up acknowledging, yes, I am the Green Arrow. What are you going to do with this? And she decides, well, I'm going to keep the secret.
And she finally believed after all the 50-100 calls he gave her, trying to say, I had nothing to do with this. I really didn't. Which he did not. That was his...
Well, it helped that her name got cleared, and he's like, oh, you probably had something to do with this, didn't you?
Yeah. Now, that he did have something to do with. He did not do it for slandering, and she finally believes him. And then he asks her, where do we go from here? She says, well, I won't tell anybody. He says, oh, that's great. I was hoping you wouldn't, but I'm not talking about the Green Arrow. I'm talking about me and you, our relationship. Where do we go from here? And, of course, he gets cut off. For other urgent reasons, and this may be something.
Well, to find out that the city council voted and he's not getting impeached.
Nope, he's going to stay there.
Exactly. So throwing the Green Arrow under the bus worked for him.
Except now, Prometheus, since we know who he is, walks up to Ollie's girlfriend's car as she's getting in her vehicle and says, hey, I got some information I would like to tell you. She says, well, I'm on my way home. And she's opened up her door like, hey, I'm not in the mood to talk right now. I'm just going to deal with this tomorrow. Close the door and says, no, this is really important. And then this is where you get to see a little bit of the Prometheus actually coming out with him being a villain.
Yeah.
He's getting a little sketchy here. So we'll figure out if he tries to kill her in the next episode or all he wants to do is just talk to her. Mm-hmm. But since he knows who Ollie really is and he's this close to him, whatever he can do to mess up his relationship with anyone in the show, he's going to do, as we've seen before.
Yeah, Prometheus wants to take everything away from him.
Yeah. And I know I complained earlier in the series about they're taking this away from Batman and him being a Batman villain. With the rogues that Batman has for this season and this series, Prometheus fits in really well with Green Arrow.
Yeah.
It fits really, really good. So we'll get to see next episode what happens with all this drama.
Mm-hmm. So, you actually had some Supergirl news.
Yes, I do. NECW fans, if they've been fans of the CW for everything they're doing with the DC comics, iZombie is also a DC property. Now, this is with the Vertigo line, but it's still inside of the DC universe. They're not connected, but it is a property of them. And one of the characters on the CW that plays Rahul Kolai, he is Revy. And he's the doctor on the CW network, iZombie. He is now going to be in the Supergirl show as a villain. So he goes from being a protagonist to antagonist, but for a different show. Now for the 18th episode called Ace Reporter, and here's a little bit of synopsis of what's going to happen. Now his character's name is Jack in this show. Jack comes to National City desperate for his technology and wants to demonstrate everything about it and to the members of the press, including Kara Danvers. And Snapper Carr. Anytime you get Snapper's Carr in this, it's just going to go bad. The guy's... he's a jerk.
Well, I'm just happy to see more of him.
Yeah.
They made a big deal about him coming to the show, but they didn't actually...
do too much with him yet.
Yeah, he's not done much.
In this episode, it sounds like he is. With his arrival, it seems to stir up feelings in his old flame, Lena Luthor. So this guy used to date Lena Luthor. So this is going to cause a big press debate. And every time it seems the Luthor's name is doing something with the media, Snapper Carr is right there to get on it. So a lot of DC fans may know Jack Spear from the first appearance of the Powers Company issue number 6 that came out in September of 2002. He was the CEO of a Biosphere Technologies who was developing a Biomax process for plasma that could control organic tissue. In an accident that occurs so often in comic books that mutated Jack into a villain named Biomax, that's funny, mm-hmm. and gave him his powers and abilities to control minds of people. So we have a person that can control people's minds on the show that's using it for bad uses. Unlike Martian Manhunter, he's a villain. So this is really all we have from the show and the details on what this guy's role is going to be in the show. But I thought it was kind of funny that they got another CW cast, a CW star to play in another show for the CW. Look what happens when Supergirl comes over into the DC property closer to the show of everybody else. Now we can tie stuff in.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
That's it for Supergirl, but I'm also still waiting for iZombie to come out.
Yeah, when
once
is that
we get
coming?
More news on that, I will definitely be bringing that one.
Is that going to be for the summer?
I'm thinking it's going to be for the summer.
Okay.
It has to be. They haven't shown anything yet, but we might get at the end of spring. If that case, we might as well wait till summer. And I guess they're still working on different things for it. from what happened in the last.
Looking for, that may actually be coming in as soon as Legends finishes.
You know, you might be right, because that might be what's taking them so long. They moved some stuff around with Legends, so. Because then, didn't iZombie come on right after Flash?
I think so.
I'm going to say that's what they used
and
to do.
And if I remember it, first... it premiered in January last year.
Yeah, and it came on right after Flash.
Yeah.
I guess since they switched that up with Legends, that's probably why. But they're working everything out, and we got some new shows on there anyway, including the Archie series,
yeah.
Riverdale. So they're switching up some time slots, but we'll be getting iZombie again soon this year.
Well, we have a little bit more casting news, and this is actually over on Gotham and on Fox. Now, do you remember who Alexander Siddig is?
You told me he did play on a lot of different TV shows. He played on The Walking Dead. Now, that sounds a little bit more familiar for me.
Yeah, he was on The Walking Dead. He was on Game of Thrones, which I've never
Game
seen. But what I know him from is he was Dr. Bashir on Star Trek Deep Space Nine back in the 90s.
And like I said, that's been so long ago, there's no way I would recognize that guy's face from
that. Well, he has been cast in Gotham as Ra's al Ghul. Now, it says Ra's al Ghul is...
Finally, we got a Ra's al Ghul on Gotham.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this is just going into the backstory of Ra's al Ghul. Most people know him because he's been in just about everything they've ever done with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But let me see here. And he's been in Arrow. This is the first time, actually, a character's been on both of the two different shows, or two different shows at the same time. Because Ra's al Ghul was on Arrow, and he was the main villain for season 3. Now they're going to bring a different actor in to play him on Gotham.
Jonathan, is there any other characters they might put?
I think that's the first one that's been on two of the different ones.
Yeah.
When it says, in Gotham, Ra's will appear to Bruce as Bruce digs deeper into the mystery of the Court of Owls and who is really the head of the mysterious organization. Though we're not sure what events will transpire afterwards, it is certain that the Demon's Head will prove to be a worthy challenge for the future Dark Knight. And then Gotham, we still have a while, almost a month and a half until Gotham comes back, because it doesn't come back until April 24th. And Alexander Siddig is actually set to appear as Ra's during the last couple episodes there.
So he's going to be in not just one episode, they're going to use him for
a
couple.
No, yeah, I think he's going to be probably the main villain of this, because remember, each of these sections has had like a subtitle. It's very similar actually to the way Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was done this year. Shield this year was done as three separate story arcs. Well, it looks like that's basically what they're doing with Gotham this year also.
Hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
Because remember, we had the first half was the Mad City, and then the second half, what was that second one we've had? I forget the subtitle for it, but it was the one with Joker and everybody.
Yeah.
And then this third half is going to be all about Ra's al Ghul, probably.
Okay.
Or the third section.
And I just started watching some of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just because of one character, Ghost Rider. So.
Yeah.
I didn't know too much about that one.
So it's going to be interesting to see what their take on Ra's.
Yeah, I feel like this one's going to do a better Ra's al Ghul just because it's on Gotham than what the Arrow did.
Yeah.
But that's my assumption. I don't know yet. We'll see once the actual show airs.
Then the next couple of news articles actually are not quite as long. You got the next two, don't you?
Yeah, this one's really not even news in my opinion. This is more so a, hey guys, if you go watch this, you can see it. Zack Snyder put out some test footage of the Justice League Aquaman sequence with him underwater, and it's literally about 3 seconds. It's not even much to get you really hyped. It looks kind of slowed down, but we don't know because this is test footage. But we do get to see Jason Momoa underwater, and he looked like he's talking to someone with a trident. I have no idea who this could be.
Well, it says if you look real close on that first picture over on the right, you can see that he's talking to, I think it was Ocean Master.
Ocean Master? See, with this, I have to watch the video again. With this being a steel, that doesn't even look like a... That's a great mask they got on, because he looks like more of a creature than a man.
Yeah.
So, that's why I said I don't know really who he's talking to, but with the trident, it probably is Ocean Master. And you guys can punch us up on anything from YouTube, on Twitter, to Instagram, probably even Facebook has a video somewhere, so... Like, you guys can look this up on your own leisure. It's been everywhere. It's been a talk of the week, actually, for Aquaman. We did get to see him underwater, and as I said, he's kind of slowed down being underwater. It could be the effect of him under there, or it could just be it's slowed down because this is test footage. But either way, Jason Momoa looks great as Aquaman. This is my main movie I'm waiting for from DC to come out. I've seen Flash TV show, so I still want to see it, but not as excited. I've seen Batman so many times. I've seen Wonder Woman on her own TV show. Everyone here has had their own thing except for Aquaman. I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with him being underwater. So just this little glimpse of him in the Justice League gives me a lot of hope for what we can see in the actual film himself.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it for Aquaman.
And then moving on to collectibles, this one is right up your alley.
And it seems like I'm getting a lot of hype from Deathstroke from last month and this month. We're going to get him in the new comic books. We're getting a direct DVD. And we're getting a new Sideshow collectible. Now, this is a pretty tall and expensive figure. I'm going to go into the detail here. Sideshow Collectibles Deathstroke's premium format figure. Sideshow Collectibles has a new taking on the pre-order, is now taking pre-orders on the Deathstroke premium figure if you guys want to go out and get this right now. Now, this is very pricey. Deathstroke figure is going to cost around, or cost exactly, $524.99, which does not include shipping and handling. But they will probably take payments low as of $59.06 per month, so you can make this up and pay for it over the course of time. The premium figure will be 19 inches in height, and the weight will be 9.5 pounds.
So this isn't a figure. This is a statue.
Oh, yeah, this is a statue. I love how he keeps saying Sideshow figures, but it's not really a figure. You can't really move him too much. He's more for display, literally only display.
Yeah.
This also comes with a And if that bit of weight to it, that thing's going to stay put. It's not going to fall over, as you do with your regular figures. That always seems to happen with me at some point during a month. This comes with an alternate replacement head for Deathstroke holding his power staff as well, combined with Deathstroke's other Sideshow collectibles in the format figure. And you can also put this with the Superman, the Batman, and the Armored Batman figures to create a display. The premium figures also is expected to ship around February to April of 2018. So you guys still have a year to get your money together.
Now, you can put it with all those other figures if you have $3,000 to make a display in your house.
They didn't mention that in here.
Well, they said this one is $525.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's half a grand, guys.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to get some pictures on here. If I can format them onto Instagram or on Twitter, if I can find some, I'll repost them. But they've got a gallery of this, if you guys go into the website of dccomicbooknews.com, and this should be one of the main, posts to come out of March 5th of 2017. So literally as we're recording up today, this just came out. So if you guys go on there after this, you hear this episode, it should still be relevant for the website, and it should still be one of the things they're advertising. But they got about 15 pictures or more up on the website that shows all the detail of the figure. And it's really detailed, very nice. And this would be great for anyone that's a real hardcore collector of these toys, or if you just have the money to blow, buy it. I would if I have the money, but there's no way I can afford this. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you have an extra $500 just laying around.
Yeah, you know, maybe with a bonus I might get it. That'd be the only way I can buy this thing.
Yeah. So, and then after that, we actually have some actual news about the DC Looney Tunes crossovers now, finally.
Yeah, there's more than what we thought coming out.
Oh, yeah. There's two of them that they hadn't even mentioned before.
But yeah,
go ahead.
And he looks a lot. I was gonna say one of them look a lot different from any of the other ones. This literally looks like a live action cartoon character now.
Yeah. So it starts off here that it's mid July is when this is coming out, and it's a full event where over the last week they put out all the details with the cover images and the solicitations for these. I'm kind of reading while I'm talking, but. Most of the interpretations, looks like they're taking their cue from the DC's recent Hanna-Barbera reimaginations. All of them will be 48 pages, and a cover price wasn't really given for the books, but DC recently, they've been putting most of their 48-page comics at about $5. So
yeah, not too bad. And with a couple extra pages to read, it's worth it.
Well, it says that, actually, the company really has traditionally, though, tried to keep the books featuring the Warner Brothers characters at the current lowest price point. So it may be $3. I don't know. But we already knew that Batman Oberfud Special Number 1 is coming. That's going to be on sale on June 28th, written by the current Batman writer Tom King, with art and cover by Lee Weeks, who did the Batman Chronicles. Now, the synopsis is, after a chance meeting with billionaire Bruce Wayne, multi-millionaire Elmer Fudd, Elmer Fudd's obsession quickly escalates to stalking the Batman through the dark alleys and the high-class social settings of Gotham City. Now, it says, note, The cover on this, the cover drew particular praise from the Uncharted panel Friday at Emerald City Comic Con. According to coverage by Newsarama.com, based on online commentary from fans, it does appear to be the most highly anticipated of the specials so far. Now, next was the Jonah Hex Yosemite Sam special number 1, which also is from June 28th. This one is written by Jimmy Palmiotti from Harley Quinn, and with art and cover done by Mark Texeira, who did Jonah Hex. Now, the synopsis is, when minor Yosemite Sam strikes it rich, word gets out as everyone comes running for his wealth, including the notorious Freeling Gang. To protect himself and his new riches, he hires bounty hunter Jonah Hex, but the man protecting him may be his worst nightmare. Now, as a note on this, it says, the writer of this says, I believe that this will mark Texeira's first work on DC Comics, or DC's preeminent Western character since the mid-1980s. And Palmiotti's Harley book remains red hot, so this special promises to be a hoot and a half. The next one's one they never actually mentioned before now. We're getting Legion of Superheroes Bugs Bunny special number 1.
Now this one looks really good. I'm waiting for this one.
Well, we have comes out on June 14th, and it's written by Sam Humphries from Green Lanterns, with art and cover by Tom Grumet from Superboy and Scott Hanna from the Green Lantern Corps. The synopsis for this, the Legion of Superheroes always thought they had taken their inspiration from the 21st century Superboy. But when they try to bring that hero into the future time, the team discovers that, to their surprise, that the Cape Champion who isn't, or even what, or the Cape Champion isn't who, or even what, they expected. So,
I'm guessing they meant to get Superman, but they got Super Bunny.
Yeah, it looks like it. And it's funny, because it's Bugs Bunny with the Superman suit on, and still not has the one little S-curl of hair on the front.
Exactly. I thought that was priceless. You're like, you guys can't get any better than that. Good detail, whoever drew that.
Mm-hmm. Well, next up, we have Lobo Roadrunner special number 1 from June 21st. And it's written by Bongo Comics co-founder Bill Morrison, with cover art and cover by Kelly Jones, who did Batman Gotham After Midnight. Now, the synopsis says, Wile E. Coyote travels to the far reaches of space to hire Lobo to hunt down and kill his greatest nemesis of all time, the Roadrunner. When the Coyote and Lobo are after you, the Roadrunner realizes if they catch him, he's through. So,
I'll say he could just get some help from Flash if he needed to, and, you know, he could just put Lobo in the Speed Force and they'll finish that, but...
Well, the next one up is one we did know about. It's Martian Manhunter Marvin the Martian, special number 1.
That's what I'm waiting for.
It's coming out June 14th, written by Steve Orlando, who's doing Justice League of America, and Frank Barbieri, who has done Lobo, with art and cover by Aaron Lopresti, who's doing Death of Hawkman. The Martian Manhunter tries to halt Marvin the Martian. Martian Manhunter tries to halt Marvin the Martian's determination for world domination. John is conflicted with his own Martian identity as he attempts to stop the hapless, determined Martian from blowing the Earth to bits in order to gain a clear view of Venus. So it looks like Marvin the Martian is once again looking for that kaboom, the Earth-shattering kaboom.
I have a hat of him, and it says, "Where's the kaboom of Marvin Martian in his eyes?" I think it's like one of the best hats ever. So he's still looking for that kaboom, just like he should be.
Well, then the last one is another one we did not know about. It's Wonder Woman Tasmanian Devil special number 1.
The one I had no idea they were even putting together whatsoever. Didn't think they would even have a Wonder Woman and Tasmanian Devil crossover. And here, he kind of reminds me of what Cheetah looks like in the comic books, like a live human being, but if you crossed him with a Tasmanian Devil.
Exactly. Well, this one, actually, there's a big name in this one. It says, written by Tony Bedard from Rebels, R-E-B-E-L-S, which I don't know that book, but that's what he's known for. And is drawn by Barry Kitson from Legion of Superheroes, with a cover by DC co-publisher Jim Lee, is doing a cover. And the synopsis says, not since the 12 labors of Hercules has a Greek warrior faced as great a danger, as a destructive peril as the Tasmanian Devil.
I can believe that. Man.
So, that's the books. I think we have 6 of them here.
Yep.
Now it says, oh, that's pretty much, that's all the information we have so far. But we have 6 books coming in June.
Hmm.
This is going to be some interesting stuff to see.
Oh, yeah, it is. There's, anytime they do a, seem like a Hanna-Barbera crossover, just a Hanna-Barbera book really...
these ones aren't Hanna-Barbera, but it looks like they're taking a page out of the Hanna-Barbera books.
I'm sorry, not Hanna-Barbera. But they're definitely taking a picture out of there. But with the Looney Tunes coming back, this might give us a new wave of Looney Tunes comic books. I wouldn't mind seeing those.
Yeah,
they don't have to change up too much. If they do, that's still fine. But I'm very interested in if they want to start this up now after these books, depending on what sell and how these do.
Mm-hmm. So that actually finishes up our news stories for this week.
Man.
So it's they had some good, decent stuff in the news this week.
Oh, yeah, they did. Being with the Warner Brothers, what they're doing with the Looney Tunes with DC comic books, anytime they try to like tie all of them together, it seems like they do really well. Like even say with the Hanna-Barbera stuff, they just mesh really well.
Well, they've done this a couple times before. I don't remember them, but I guess the first time they had a Looney Tunes crossover was they had a Looney Tunes Superman crossover. I don't remember when this was, but it mentioned it in the article.
Hmm. Yeah, I can't, not from my memory. I have to look that up. Never heard of that one before.
So,
but it's not surprising.
But let's go ahead and get into our Rebirth reviews from February 22nd, 2017. Do you want to start off with, or actually, let's start with Justice League of America. You want to start on that one, and I'll put in my 2 cents here and there?
Sure. We can go back and forth with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I read this one last week, so if I stumble on some of these, help me out. I read this when I first got it. I couldn't help it. This looks really good. I've been waiting for this Justice League of America to come out for a while now. Well, we have Vixen and Batman in Gotham City, and they're talking about how they need the Justice League and how they're always going to be doing good, and they're trying to still do good, even though it seemed like this team's kind of a little off. Never thought we'd get a team of this many different characters together.
Yeah, they do, and Vixen does mention straight up how this team is just barely a team. It could barely stand each other, and it's ready to explode at any point.
Yeah, and definitely with all these combustible elements into play here. Everyone's different on here. No one's really meshing well together. But the city of Vanity, you have a house burning down, or like a church really burning down, and it's Black Canary and Ray that's on call for this, and they are getting the people out, and they're doing what they need to do. Then the Pacific Ocean, you got these weird creatures, lava creatures coming from up out of the sea. Like
yeah,
from the
that
Earth
or they're like giant trolls of some sort or something. And you get Lobo
something.
Fighting them.
Yes, and of course he's taking them out like they're nothing because he's Lobo. While there's smoke burning off his flesh, he's just going through like it's not happening.
Yep.
Then you get at Sanctuary, Rhode Island, you get Killer Frost and Adam, and this is where they're having an awkward conversation because he's a scientist, she's a scientist, she's evil, he's good, and he's calling her still Killer Frost, and he's like,
well,
oh, I'm
she's
sorry.
Not evil anymore. She used to be.
Used to be, and this is what he forgot, too. He's like, Killer, I mean, Frost, you're trying to get rid of that killer part. I know you're trying to drop that. I'm sorry. She's saying it's fine. She grew up her whole life with stuff like that getting mixed up, and she's been having that name with her so long, it's not bad. As long as you know, don't keep it up all the time, she won't freeze them to death.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, now we're in New York, and this weird orb just pops up out of nowhere, and it's just taking over, not the city, but it's just taking over everything in that little area, like a time portal. And this guy's taking a photo of it, or video, of course, because, you know, everyone has their cell phones now. He takes that guy's phone, crushes it in his hands, and says, Earth is worse than I thought. And it's this team of weird aliens being led by this weird being like he's made of metal.
Well, his name is Lord Havoc.
Axe in his hand.
That is Lord Havoc.
Sorry, Lord Havoc. Heard the name. I was like, huh, that sounds familiar. Mm-hmm. Well, now he's the Lord, and he's trying to take over this world. And he has these band of creatures, I'll say, with him. That's going to try to take this world over.
Yeah, later on he says their name. Give me a minute while you're talking. They are called the... Where'd it go? I'm looking for this one. The Extremists.
The Extremists. Oh, that's right. Thank you. Well, now we're back at Sanctuary. You get Killer Frost and Ray once... Ray the Atom. Once again, back here at it. And this isn't nothing good.
No, that's
they
not Ray. That's
here.
Ryan.
Ryan.
Remember, this is Ryan Choi.
These R's are getting mixed up their names, but they're all Adam, so it makes sense. Ryan and Frost are back at the Sanctuary, and they're just still trying to build things there, fix everything that needs to be in control for his facility. But then they get a news feed from what's going on in New York, and they're like, uh-oh, we have a problem. We probably should suit up and tell the others. So now we're in Gotham, and now they all need to meet up there in New York and fix all this. So you get Vixen, Batman, Adam, Black Canary, Ray, Lobo, all on call as they're destroying New York, the Extremists, and Lord Havoc. The Justice League pops in and is like, we're not having this. So whatever rules you're trying to boss them around, they're not having, and they're going to stop them. This is their Earth.
Well, the Extremists actually, and Lord Havoc says straight up, they're here to actually save the planet. Save them from free will, save them from choice, save them so that let Lord Havoc make all the decisions for you so you can't make the mistake.
Just like a dictator.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, as he said, the Lord. So they're taking him down. It doesn't seem like anything's really working. You get Batman Vixen charging at him, but he's got like this lightning axe that's just messing them up. Vixen turns to about three different animals still trying to, or at least enhance three different animal powers. Nothing's working. The Ray is now trying to take all the people back and get them out of here. So he puts that light beam on and have them disappear. And now they're in a different part of town, or at least somewhere completely different.
Yeah, get so they're safety.
Safe. Yes, and they're safe now. Now Batman and the rest of JLA can really go all out and take these guys down, which they're doing. You got Killer Frost trying to freeze them. These are really some good action sequences in here, by the way.
Yeah.
You got Black Canary screaming. You got Killer Frost with her ice abilities. Lobo taking everything and not getting hurt at all. The Atom shrinking down. And you got Vixen changing into all these other different animal powers. This is where the Atom tries to get on Lord Havoc and take him down by getting up close and personal with him, maybe he can get inside him and mess him up. Doesn't work. He grabs him. While he's turning into his normal form, by electrocuting him, grabs him by the throat, and he's getting ready to snap his neck. And Batman sees this happening, and since he's the leader that they need, he tells him, you know what, put him down. You don't want him, take me. Bargain with me. So that's when we get into the next issue of The Extremists, Part 1. But that was just League of America, issue number 1. Pretty
exactly.
Good, solid stuff. They start out on something pretty good.
And the cool thing is Batman's making the point at the very beginning that the reason the Justice League of America, he put it together is because it's a team that hopefully the rest of these are not gods. These are regular people on this team.
Right.
Yeah, they have powers, but they're not looked upon like the regular Justice League is, where the regular Justice League looked on this is a pantheon of gods here.
Yeah, and the only one I was going to say that might be anything close to being superly overpowered would only be two of them, and that's Killer Frost and Lobo. But they are far away from being anything like what a Superman is. These guys got so many flaws they need to work on. Lobo knows he's a piece of crap. He's like, I know I'm scum and I've got all these abilities and I don't really care what you think of me.
Mm-hmm.
Killer Frost is trying to get her name cleared and get really her humanity back. She was known as being looked upon not even being a human being because of how evil she was. So she's trying to become a good person once again. Then with everyone else, as you said, they're really normal with certain abilities.
Yeah.
Well, nothing earth-shattering.
And then next week, you'll see on our pull list later that we're getting Justice League of America number 2. So this is a bi-weekly issue, comic.
Mm-hmm. And it's doing pretty well so far, so hopefully keep it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, the next one, this is one of the – I think we've covered Batman Beyond one other time. But this one had some major things happen at the very end of it. But this is actually issue number 5 of Batman Beyond, and it's Escaping the Grave, the finale. It's the finale of the first story arc from Batman Beyond. Now – anybody who hasn't been reading Batman Beyond, it started off with this character called Terminus, who's, or was it Terminus or Terminal? I think it's Terminal.
Terminal.
Now he's trying to, as far as everybody knows, he's taken over Jokertown, and he's, which is a section of the city that is run basically by the Joker gangs, and the police won't even go in there now. But he's taken over as leader of Jokertown, and he's trying to resurrect the Joker. We find out in the last issue, number 4, that that's not the Joker that he has. He actually has Bruce Wayne. But he's dressed him up to look like the Joker.
Huh. Okay.
Now, what happened to Bruce Wayne? This issue in the very beginning goes back and tells a little bit of the backstory of what happened to Bruce Wayne. Now, in one of the storylines earlier, I guess there was a bunch of cyborgs that attacked the city. And Terry was actually fighting off the cyborgs. Bruce was in one of the was at Wayne Power's tower, monitoring the situation and trying to help with everything. When the tower gets destroyed by, let me see the name. Got the closed bugger. Whoever the villain was it Brother Eye? I believe it was Brother Eye. If you remember him from the cartoons and stuff.
Oh yeah,
Well,
weird,
he destroys
that guy,
the Wayne
that
powers.
Guy creeped me out.
Yeah, well,
he
destroys.
Like their scarecrow.
He destroys the bunker where Bruce is at, and as far as everybody knows, everybody died. Then we get back to now, and Terry has figured out why Terminal, because now that he knows he has Bruce, is like, well, there's only one thing he can think of, the reason he would want Bruce Wayne. And that is because in Wayne Powers Tower, there's something called Keystone. Now, Wayne Powers provides power and everything for the city and then for the world, but it also provides the internet and everything else, all the internet and everything for the world runs through Wayne Powers. Well, Bruce, being who he was, has built something called Keystone. And it's a computer or something in there that basically everything that comes through Wayne Powers is copied before it goes back out. So it has all the information to everything. So Terry has figured out that that must be what Terminal's after.
You heard me?
Huh?
Is it better than Google?
Yeah, I think it knows even more than Google does, which is hard to do.
I know, right?
But, so Terry flies to Wayne Powers and finds the secret entrance, and he has the security code, and has access, Terry McGinnis does, because Bruce built it and gave him access to it also. But Terminal shows up on the landing pad. He has one of his Jokers in a hood behind him, pushing the pod with Bruce Wayne in it, thinking that that's the Joker. Everybody's still saying that's the Joker. But he needs Bruce Wayne, his thumbprint, retinal scan, and voice print to get into Keystone. So he comes up, and he finally tells this guy, well, no, this isn't the Joker. Everybody thought it was Joker, but that's fine. Because this is actually Bruce Wayne. Now, I'm not interested in taking over Joker Town and being the leader there. I want to take over the world. Part of that is by getting Wayne's fortune, and if you have Wayne, you can get a hold of his money. So they do that, and the guy in the hood, which they're calling the janitor, is there with him and said, well, this is the Joker? And Terminal's like, no, this is not, no, you idiot, this is Bruce Wayne. And then he says, wow, you sure had us fooled, boss, but why? And then Terminal goes through why he did all this stuff. He had, after the attack with Brother Eye and the cyborgs, the whole town was in triage mode. So there were tents all over the place taking care of people, helping them out. He was in one of those tents, then he recognized Bruce Wayne in the tent, but no one else did. So he said, oh, wait, I have an idea. And he took Bruce Wayne and kept him alive and kept him going and nursed him back to where he's at now. And now he really wants to get a hold of Keystone. So they're going. They have his code to get in. They have a voice synthesizer that will mimic his voice. So they give him the passcode. That's in. The computer accepts it. They put knocked out Bruce Wayne, his hand up against the wall for palm print, and he gets that. Then they check his retinal, and they get that also. But as the door opens, Batman's standing inside the door. And then, so Terminal and Batman start fighting, back and forth, and Terminal, back and forth, and back and forth. Finally, Terry takes down Terminal, and goes to look for Bruce, and sees that this other guy, and Bruce is starting to wake up at this point. But the other guy takes him all the way to the edge of the building and says, consider Mr. Wayne's plight. These chairs are notoriously tricky because he's in a wheelchair or one of those hover wheelchairs. Because if the anti-gravity device should conk out at the wrong time, and then Bruce is saying, your voice, you can't be. And then pushes Bruce Wayne over the edge. At which point Terry runs, dives, and saves him. But as he's going back, he said, Bruce is telling him, no, get that janitor. You can't let him go. And at this point, the janitor and Terminal have took off in their ship. And Terry's like, I got it. Don't worry about that. He's like, I told you to leave me. If you realize who, you'd never have let me fall. So we don't know who this is yet. But obviously, Bruce Wayne recognized the voice. Now, Max and what's Terry's little brother's name? Matt. Matt and Max have actually been Terry's backup on this, and they're actually on a building a little ways away, so they're tracking the ship as it leaves, and Matt pulls up a bazooka and shoots down the ship. So they actually did have Terminal on lockdown. So Terry goes and drops off gets Bruce back, puts him in the building. Bruce is like, forget about me, go find Terminal now. And Terry's like, well, wait, can't we have a breath and just be happy in the fact that we got you back? I'll get Terminal. And his actual lines here, Terry says, this is a great day, Bruce. You're back, and the Joker is still dead. And Bruce says, about that. And then we get the epilogue.
Uh-oh.
The ship crash-landed out in a park outside the city, looks like. So Terminal is helping figure out what's going on with the ship, and he's talking down to the janitor guy that's working with him, and says, and the guy said, "You were a fool to think you could beat Wayne." And Terminal's like, "Wait, no, if you talk to me like that again, you're a dead man. Now grab the crowbar and help me out." And then the janitor also says after that, "Well, using the Joker's name was crazy. I should know." And then Terminal's like, "Well, not that that lunatic is anything about it. Now get to work," thinking the Joker is dead. Everybody knows the Joker is dead. Then the janitor says, "If you say so, no one uses the Joker's name." Then they show the crowbar going up and down and up and down and up and down and smashing. And the hood comes off, and it's a kind of a familiar face. It says, "No one uses my name," and it's the Joker. An older Joker, but it is still the Joker. Somehow he's alive. Now, the reason I put this in here is because this, as far as I know, is the first time we've seen the real Joker since Rebirth started.
Yeah, we haven't seen the actual real Joker since then.
So instead of putting him in any of the regular Batman books, they brought him back first in Batman Beyond. Now, they've teased him a couple times in Batman Beyond with the Return of the Joker TV movie and some of the other things they've done, but they've never actually had him, as far as I know, in Batman Beyond. And then from there, we'll get to see what's going on.
He was dead, so.
And the last page here actually says, "Of course, Batman could never, nor will he ever, kill me." And a lot of laughing.
At least not the Batman he knew of.
Exactly. So it looks like we do have a real Joker back on Batman Beyond. And in this Probably one, with the way he's talking there, it kind of cements the idea that a lot of people have had for years that the Joker actually knows who Batman is, but he doesn't want to give up that secret because there's no fun there.
No, not at
all.
He's
figured out who Batman is a long time ago.
And they kind of hinted at that in the New 52. I don't know if that's still canon or not, but yeah, he knew that in the new Death of the Family. He already knew who all the Batman Batman family even was too, not just Batman.
And you got to remember that everything that I've ever seen with the Joker, he's all about having fun. And if he's not having fun, he doesn't want to do anything with it. Well, giving up Batman's identity for him is not fun.
No, that wouldn't be no fun. I mean, where is he gaining anything out of that?
Exactly. So I believe you have the last book.
Yes, it's the last book for the week. This is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, issue number 15.
I wish I would have. When I went to go pick this up, they were sold out of it already, so I got to go look for it at a couple other stores this week.
Yeah, that's how I felt about the new Superman issue that came out last week. I was like, oh, crap, I wanted that. But hopefully I have it when we go back.
Yeah.
Well, right now this starts back at Space Sector Zero, and the Green Lanterns and some of the Sinestro Corps are still having this meeting of if they can coexist and if everyone's okay with it. Also, if they can round up the other Sinestro Corps members and put them in jail. If they don't want to join the team.
Yeah.
So you still have John and... I'm trying to remember her name again.
Sornak?
John and... Sornak, thank you. They're the main ones with Kilowog in the back, putting in his 2 cents if needed, to convince everybody, hey, we got to find them, and we're going to now, since it seemed like everyone's on the right track with this, we're going to start sending out Green Lanterns to find the rest of the Sinestro Corps. So as John's doing this, you get Tumar 2 going after... Rue. I'm sorry, those names.
Yeah, everybody from that planet has a strange name like that. Yeah, Tomar 2, Tomar Ray.
Well, he's going after him. He's like, gladly, I'll do it, of course. And then it's the really scary chick from the Sinestro Corps. She's the, what's her name? They don't really say it here. They show a picture of where she carries the babies on her back.
I don't know.
I can't think of her name. She's a very scary character. If you guys are listening to this, let us know in the comments somewhere on one of our social medias or on here who this actually is. She carries the babies on her back and keeps them there and steals them from their cribs. She's a Sinestro Corps member. Telling them, you know what, I'm going to get Guy to deal with this. Hey, Guy, where are you? He's looking for him. He's like, oh, crap, where did Guy go? Ring, where's Guy? Then the ring says, he cannot be found. His current whereabouts are very unknown. The last time he was saw... was in Sector 2814. So he's like, perfect. He doesn't even have his ring on him where they can find him.
That's never a good thing when Guy Gardner disappears.
No. Well, he decided to go rogue. They say where he is now for us. He's in Space Sector 1974 on the planet Weep. And he's beating up some scumbag in the alley, which I don't think he's a bad guy. He's just probably thinking, why is this human beating me up? This is a planet full of law-abiding travelers. that they care about. And guy's just punching this guy in the face, giving him a black eye. And this is an alien crying out loud. he's saying, don't worry about this. Don't mud your shorts or anything. But if you keep, if you don't tell me where this guy is at, I'm going to keep punching you until you tell me. It's like, oh, no, just let the guy go. And then we go to another panel here. And he somehow stole the taxi from the taxi driver.
From Space Gabby?
And he says, yeah. He says on the letter, thanks for loaning this guy. He's thinking, you son of a, you know what? Mm-hmm. So as Guy would say, he stole this. Anyone else would say Guy stole it. But in Guy's mind, he's like, oh, I just borrowed it. Hopefully he gets it back.
He plans on taking it back. Whether or not it's all one piece is maybe a different story, but he'll take it back.
Yeah, he will best way he can. So he says, well, my pal, the space cabbie over there, he gave me his gave me his taxi so I could come all the way here just to find the guy. So if you don't tell me, I'm going to just keep punching. He's like, you know what? I'll tell you why I last saw him. He doesn't like to be bothered, though, so you might be in trouble. He's like, you think I'm worried about it? Just tell me where he's at, and I'll wait for him. Of course, Guy. At this point, they're not telling you who he's going after yet. We'll get to that at the very end of the book. Now, in Space Sector 3172, you get Hal, St. Walker, and Kyle still going over what's happening to this world. Why is it dying? Why has it lost its hope? Well, they're going to the mountain, and this is when Kyle tells Hal, help me, I'm in the mountain, you must head for the mountain. And then something wraps around Kyle's neck like a vine, and as Hal's going there, you get St. Walker trying to free Kyle from this weird mountain. It's got these big skulls in it with red eyes saying, I'm anguish, I'm misery, I'm everything that the Blue Lanterns hate, everything that takes away hope. It's like really death and destruction just leave you with darkness and nothing but pity. And this is when Hal comes in and says, well, I got light for days. No darkness is going to take me out. Then you get him and Walker trying to free Kyle. And the closer that Hal gets, he's got like this buzzsaw construct he makes from his ring to cut Kyle out. And this is when St. Walker tells him, no, don't get too close. And he does. So now both of them are trapped in darkness. It seems like when this weird mountain gets you trapped in its vines, it's like it kills you from the inside and takes away all hope you had left, eventually where you'll just go away and die. Now back on Mogo, you get Hal and, where is her name? I gotta pronounce that right. Nestor's daughter?
Oh, so Nestor's daughter is Sarnak.
Sornak.
Or Sornak.
There you go. Sornak. Well, these are basically the leaders. It's funny because they're the two leaders of the Green Lantern Corps right now. He's in charge since Hal, he said, is being stupid and Guy's being extra stupid. And they're the veterans of the crew. You would think they would know not to run off, especially one of them not running off with no ring. And he's just going on a spiel here saying, and then they're also human. You would think they would know all this. And then this is when Shornak tells them, listen, just like you said, they're veterans. They know what they're doing. And plus, you should expect this from them already. You've been around them enough to know they're still going to do what they want. But at least they always come back.
Yeah.
And then this is where you get a space cabbie saying, hey, I got some information about what might be going on with Guy, but just don't shoot the messenger. And now we go back to see what Hal and Kyle are doing. They're in complete black darkness. There's no light around them except for their ring. And that's even beginning to dim down. And inside of this is just saying, it takes, and this is when St. Walker's even saying the same thing. Not them, please let them go. And this is when the construct saying, here it is, Saint. We reveal to you their weakness, the ones you care about, the shattering of your hope. If your friends are gone, you really don't have anything else. So by shattering your friends, we have won, because we take down these three Lanterns all by themselves. And this is where you see Kyle and Hal saying, what's wrong with our rings? Then you get to see their memories. It's one of, now I don't know which character this is, but it's a family where they're coming home to see the husband, the mother, the grandkids and everything. And they're all being taken away now. No more hope. Then you see, Kyle used to be. He used to be a very great White Lantern. Now he remembering when he was an evil Green Lantern for some reason. They turned him, saying all the hopes and wishes are being torn from them. And I saw all this darkness. They're being broken right now. They're weathering away into nothing. But the good thing about this is they're Green Lanterns. No matter what happens, they always have light. And this is where you get Hal saying, I won't let none of this happen. This can happen. And St. Walker's saying, even though you're testing them and you're trying to despair them of everything they have and take away what was their livelihood, they can still stand alone against you because they have one purpose. And this is where you start seeing the Green Lantern logo light and the White Lantern logo light popping out. And this is when St. Walker says they were inspired by you showing them all the things that they're going to be taken away from them. That's how you activate their powers. You have a lantern here full of hope. You have a lantern here full of willpower. You have a lantern here full of life. No matter how much you try to show them the bad stuff, that's when they're going to fight back and say, nope, I like what I am too much. And they actually blow up that whole mountain and destroy it. They won. And by doing so, you get to see a little teeny tree growing, a little vine in the mountain. And this is when St. Walker says, see, this is hope growing right now. With this little tree, we have won. And since they've, you know, done their duty, now they're getting the response on their ring and hearing what's been going on with the other Lantern, saying, hey, we lost a guy. Hal, are you out there? We need your help. They respond back, and he says, sure, me and Kyle are heading back to you, but we're also bringing a friend with us, which is St. Walker. So that's done. They did their job. But now back on Yeep, you got Guy waiting for the whatever person he was waiting for that he was interrogating, that they telling him you don't want to mess with him. He's pretty big. He's very vicious and very scary. He'll probably kill you, and he doesn't like to be bothered. Well, he bothered him. So as Guy's waiting right now, these guys outside the barn or bar are telling them he's adorable, just sitting there napping, waiting for his death. And once he wakes up, he really wasn't sleeping. He just was trying to make it look like that. It is actually one of the biggest Sinestro lanterns they've had. Now, this guy is supposed to be the equivalent to what Kilowog is for the Green Lanterns. Krillo, he's a scary, big alien that teaches the Green Lanterns, or the Sinestro Corps, how to fight. And he says, oh, wow, I was waiting for lunch. I didn't know they were going to deliver it. He's talking to Guy.
Yeah.
Guy says, you know what? I'm not afraid of you. I know that your race usually kills off people like me, but guess what? You're known now as the guy to be afraid of everyone. And I know you're just like Kilowog. For some reason, everyone compares you to him. I don't know if it's because you're ugly, you're big, you stink. I don't know. But you are kind of scary. But the thing about me is I don't need my ring to beat you. I'm trying to show everybody that in the galaxy, I'm still the one big bad guy that they need to look towards before they can do anything. So I'm going to ask you in a fair fight, how about you remove your ring and we go at it one-on-one? He says, look, Lord Sinestro gave me this ring, and I have a purpose for this, and I'm going to put fear inside the hearts of people. He said, that's all good and nice, but wouldn't it be kind of funny if a Sinestro Corps member lost to a regular Green Lantern without his ring? Wouldn't you want to do something like that? And I know you aren't Kilowog. You're not me. But if there was anyone else close to being like you, it would be me. And so there's only going to be one of us to do this, so what do you say? How about we duke it out? So take off the jewelry pieces, and let's make this title a little bit more interesting. So, Guy's going to fight Krillo, hopefully without his ring, in a one-on-one battle. And I'm pretty sure, being a human and an alien, I don't think Guy's going to win this. I think his brain isn't thinking for him. He's thinking more of his brawn. But we'll see what happens in the next issue.
Okay. Well, that was our reviews for this week.
Yeah. Guy. Just so stupid.
Yeah, Guy. Well, no, Guy was being Guy.
Yeah, it's like you can't go up against this guy. This isn't a human you're fighting. It's an 8-foot alien.
Yeah. So, but that leaves one other thing we got to do for today.
Yes, we just have to make one more trip.
And that song can only mean one thing. It's time for our comic shop pull list for March. Ah, I don't have the numbers in front of me. There we go. March 8th, 2017. And this is a preview of what's coming on. This was, of course, brought to you by the Shazbots. That was their song, The Comic Book Shop. Check them out on Facebook, Instagram, and at Shazbots.com. Let them know that DC Superpower sent you over. Now, the first book we actually have is Action Comics 975. We've only got 25 more issues till we get to issue 1,000.
Man.
So, and wow. This one actually is part two of the Superman Reborn storyline. And being that it's 975th issue, that it says, celebrating our 975th issue with a supersized special as another layer of the Superman Clark Kent mystery is exposed. This is Superman Reborn number two. And in a backup story written by Paul Dini, with art by Ian Churchill, learn what it all means for the son of Superman, who is the prize in a deadly game. This is art is done by Jamie Mendoza and Doug Menke. The backstory art is done by Ian Churchill. The backstory is written by Paul Dini. And the main story is written by Dan Jurgens. And this is a 48-page special.
Man. So that's going to be pretty long.
Uh-huh.
Well, for our next one, we also have Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, issue number 8. Blackbird Part 1. There's something strange afoot in Gotham City. Someone's making promises to the world's deadliest killers, offering them things well beyond the powers of a mortal human to provide. Unfortunately, Nightwing's been caught in the crossfire and is badly hurt. Good thing he's not the exact person whose presence is most likely to make things weird between Batgirl and Huntress, right? Art done by Roge Antiano and written by Shauna Benson and Julie Benson.
Okay. Next up, we actually have Deathstroke number 14. Twilight Part 3. In exchange for dropping all the charges against him, Deathstroke takes a contract for the U.S. Naval Intelligence that proves far more difficult than it should be, or than it should, and encounters an unexpected new ally in teenager Tanya Spears, a.k.a. Power Girl. I don't know that name for Power Girl, do you?
No, not for her.
Okay.
Unless it's here, I'm going to Google this really quick.
Yep. Well, I'm going to finish up that the art is done by Joe Bennett, and it's written by Christopher Priest. Now, as far as I knew, what, is this a new Power Girl?
Yeah.
Okay. Has she been in the comics before, or is this the first time we're going to see her?
She's Earth 2, Karen. Let me just give you a quick rundown of her. I have seen her before. I didn't know who she was. She is the most intelligent 17-year-old on the planet, and is inherited the mantle of Power Girl of Earth 2, Karen Starr. She's a member of the Teen Titans. That's right. She was in the New 52.
Oh, okay. Correct.
That first was introduced. Let me make sure I'm right here. No, she's introduced in World's Finest, actually. Issue number 23 in 2014. So this was New 52. That's why we're not too used to her.
Yeah.
We weren't used to all the New 52 characters. But okay. Well, there we go for that. Next, we have Detective Comics issue number 952. And this one's also climbing. The League of Shadows Part 3. Batman's team faces the League of Shadows, which believes it's only one thing, complete and utter destruction. The League's plan for which the city is revealed. But can this even be the secret compared to the bombshell that is the most... Can this compare to the bombshell that is telling the identity of Cassandra Cain's mother?
Ooh.
Yeah. We have art done by Kristen Deuce Bedritz and written by James T. Tynion the Fourth.
Okay. Then next up after that, we get The Flash number 18. Sins of the Father Part 1. With his superhero career finally underway, Wally West must learn the truth about his father, Daniel West, the long-lost villain known as the Reverse Flash. To retrace his steps, Kid Flash and the Flash must travel to the most dangerous place in the DC Universe, Bell Rev Prison. For a second there, when I first started reading that, I was thinking, Wally West, wow, Wally's coming back. Well, wait, different Wally.
Yep, Wallace.
Yes. Well, art is done by Neil Gouge and is written by Joshua Williamson.
Cool.
I wonder if they're going to meet up with the Suicide Squad at all, since that's kind of where they're headquartered at also.
We might get a little cameo. I wouldn't be surprised from somebody. More likely Captain Boomerang. Hopefully. Next, we have Hal Jordan, Green Lantern Corps, issue number 16. Quest for Blue Lanterns, part 3. Guy Gardner sets out on a one-man mission to take out the Sinestro Corps ring slinger everyone's afraid of, Arkrillo. Can Green Lantern, with a grudge to take down the monstrous alien and prove he's still the toughest guy in the cosmos to carry the power ring, as Guy's hope for a fair fight wanes, Hal Jordan and Kyle Rayner streak across the galaxy in a last-ditch effort to find Saint Walker of the Blue Lanterns and ensure that the blue light of hope isn't extinguished.
Didn't they already find him?
I was going to say that. It didn't really make sense there. He should have said make sure the light still isn't extinguished since they already found him, but hey. I think I got what they meant. Art done by Rafa Sandoval and Jordi Targaryen. written by Robert Venditti.
Okay. Next up, we get New Superman number 9. Coming to America Part 1. The new Superman is coming to Metropolis. Our young hero's newfound fame has attracted the attention of the last person he would have wanted, Lex Luthor. Now Lex is going to take Kenan on a mission to track down a mysterious mystery villain stalking LexCorp. And if the pair want to find the culprit, they'll have to go through the Chinese Triad Gang. But trouble in Metropolis means catching the attention of the Man of Steel. Art is done by Victor Bogdanovic, and it's written by Zhongliang Yang.
Huh. Well, we're going to have an interesting story there with Lex Luthor and the new Superman. I didn't think I was going to get something that soon with them.
Hey, You can't have a Superman story without Lex Luthor in there somewhere. Super Sons even had Lex Luthor in the end of the first issue.
You have a good point there. Never mind. That's right. Well, next we have Justice League of America issue number 2, an Extremist Part 2. Believing heroes to be a threat to the survival of any world, Lord Havoc and the Extremists have already murdered the mightiest heroes from their home destination dimension. To save Earth, they kill thousands more. They will kill thousands more, starting with the newly formed JLA. But eye to eye, are Havoc and Batman's goals that different? Billions of lives depend on that answer. Okay. I don't know how they could even be eye to eye on that. Art done by Joe Pardo and Ivan Reese, and written by Steve Orlando. I can kind of see where they're going with that, though.
I think they
both want peace, but I think they're going to take it in a different way. And also, you got to think about this. Batman is a hero, but he's not the type of hero that you would think with as with the other members of the JLA or even the Justice League. He's a regular human. So maybe if he can convince them there's people like me doing this, we'll see where they go. I'm just thinking too much.
Well, the next one up we got after that is Red Hood and the Outlaws number 8. Who is Artemis? Prologue. As Red Hood and the Outlaws gear up for their journey to Banim Maigal, or Maidal, shocking secrets from Artemis's past come to light. Who is this mysterious Amazon warrior? What is her relation to Wonder Woman? And what makes her quest for the Bow of Ra so personal? Answers to all of this and more in a thrilling new adventure with your favorite band of misfits. Art done by Kenneth Rocafort and written by Scott Lobdell.
All right. Well, next one we have is issue of the Suicide Squad number 13. Burning Down the House Part 3. Shot, stabbed, beaten, maimed, brought back from the edge of death, sent out to do it all over again and again. This has been the life of Floyd Lawson, a.k.a. Deadshot, but not anymore. That moment of the Suicide Squad fans had thought would never come has finally arrived when Deadshot achieves that which no other has, escape. All it's going to cost is one of his teammates' lives. Is he going to be willing to take it or not? Art done by John Romita Jr., Danny Mickey, and written by Rob Williams. Okay. This is going to be a good issue. Yeah. I wonder if he would actually... You know, this is going back to actually what happened in the movie. Remember when Amanda Waller said, I'll let you see your daughter and whatever if you shoot Harley Quinn? He didn't do it, so...
Yeah.
I feel like he's not going to do it in here either, because he also did just come to terms with his daughter, and she's okay with him doing what he does, because she understands why he's doing what he does in the last issue. So he could do it. He still could take somebody out, but then again, he came to peace with his daughter, which might make him still not kill one of his teammates.
We'll find out when we get there. The next
plus, Amanda Waller's not in charge either no more. She's supposed to be dead.
Yeah, as far as everybody knows, she's dead. So she wasn't mentioned in that, was she?
Mm-mm, not at all.
Okay, so eventually we'll figure out what exactly happened with her.
Yeah.
So the next one up, we have Supergirl number 7. Mission Mind. Supergirl's powers mean nothing when she's trapped inside the consciousness of a killer. Creeping through the mind of a Kryptonian monster, Supergirl finds herself on a suicide mission to return Lar-On to sanity inside the DEO. Remember, Lar-On is the that Kryptonian werewolf guy.
Right, I thought he looked familiar. I'm like, didn't we see him like at the beginning of the Rebirth?
Uh-huh. Well, art is done by Matthias Bergera, and it's written by Steve Orlando.
Sweet. And the next one we actually have is Superwoman, issue number 8. By a thread, the Super Family relies all around the world. Rallies around Superwoman as the reason for her powers are killing her and are revealed. As her connections to the new Superman of... I'm sorry, not New Superman. The New 52 Superman, the events of Superman Reborn will greatly impact the future of Metropolis' new hero. Okay, I was wondering if that was all going to tie in together.
Yeah.
Art done by Ray McCarthy, Emanuela Lupiciano, and written by Phil...
That's Emanuela Lupiciano.
Thank you. I get the names like that. And also written by Phil Jimenez.
Okay. Well, next up, we have Titans number 9. Made in Manhattan, Part 2. The Titans come face-to-face with the Fearsome Five and their newest member, Bumblebee. Meanwhile, Dick and Wally make a stunning discovery about the Meta-Solutions. Art done by Norm Rapmond and Brett Booth, and it's written by Dan Abnett. So do you think, what do you think this discovery is? Maybe the fact that it's being run by Simon?
Nah, it's something else. But seeing this does confirm she will definitely be in the new Deathstroke storyline for the Titans.
Yeah.
So we did see her on there barely because he's so little, but she is going to be a part of the team.
Whether or not is she part of the team or is she still working with the Solutions place?
I think by end of all, she's going to be a member of the team.
Probably.
She's going to go back to what they were. At least since Mal gave up his powers, he can be the stay-at-home dad. Unless he gets those back somehow, which I'm kind of hoping he does.
Yeah.
But our last issue is Wonder Woman issue number 18 for the week. God Watch Part 2. God Watch Rose and Diana has her first encounter with the ghost of the machine known as Dr. Cyber. Art done by Bilquis Ively and written by Greg Rucka.
Okay. So we got a full week of comics for next week. We got 14 titles coming out for Rebirth.
I got to figure out which ones am I actually going to buy because I probably won't be able to get every single one of these.
Yeah, I'm going through, okay, which ones am I going to pick up? I have this one,
yeah,
that one, this one.
Right now. There's a lot of good ones in here, though. So, always, there always are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DC is still, they've not really had a major misstep yet that I've seen.
No, they have not. The thing is, they got so many books, we got to figure out which ones do we want to spend our money on, though, is the problem, because we would go broke if we bought every single book every week.
Yeah, it looks like I have like 9 titles I got to pick up for that week.
I think mine's going to be 5. Kind of narrow mine down.
Yeah. Oh, that's narrowing it down. I would have been picking up a lot more than that.
Oh yeah, when this all first happened, I think we bought every single issue for about a good month.
Well, that was before they started adding on. That's back when there was like 5 or 6 issues each month every week.
It was more than that, Ken. It was about 9.
So, But Super Friends, thanks for taking the ride with us this week. Vernon, why don't you let everybody know where we're at, or where they can find us?
Guys, you can find us on our social media, and for Twitter, you're going to find us at SuperpowersDC. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram and Facebook, DC Superpowers Podcast. And for my personal usage on my Instagram, you can find me at HollinThatWolf. On my Twitter, you can find me at VYellow, and on my Facebook, you can find me at Vernon McWayne Moore.
And you can always find me on Twitter and Instagram as GW1Ken. On Facebook, I'm just Ken Rose. Also, you can find the show, DC Superpowers Podcast, on the Tangent Bound and the Weebie Geeks Networks. And also, anybody who happens to be in the Cleveland area, this weekend coming up, March 10th, 11th, and 12th, you can find myself and my wife, Vicky, at Cleveland Concoction at the Sheridan Airport Hotel. That's going to be March 10th, 11th, and 12th. Anybody who comes to find us, I know we'll have some GeekWatch 1 merchandise. And just come and say hi. See what's going on. So, I think that's all I had for this week. How about you, Vernon?
That's really all I got, too. I'm just going to say we'll be back next week to give you another review list of the TV shows, comic books, and all our new news we're going to get.
Exactly. So, Vernon, thanks for hanging out. Super Friends, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Weebie Geeks Network podcast.